Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We talked earlier this week about this incredible Wall Street Journal article on Planned Parenthood and its new strategy to come to a mall near you. An upscale strategy for Planned Parenthood in terms of all of its services going into wealthier communities. We're going to be talking about this this picture. We have some additional data to bring, but the big issue is going to be this. Is America really going to be looking for abortion services in the shopping mall? I mean, have we reached the point where there is that kind of demand? Have we lost so much of a sense of human dignity and the sanctity of human life that a group like Planned Parenthood can be, as they say, the lens crafters of reproductive services? That's what they say they want to be. And we're no longer talking about abortion clinics down an alleyway somewhere or perhaps near a college or university campus downtown. We're talking now about the shopping mall, the suburban area. We're talking about the development of centers Planned Parenthood are calling Planned Parenthood Express. This tells us a great deal about America. It tells us a great deal about where Planned Parenthood thinks America is. And we're going to be talking about whether they are accurate and what that means for us. First, to review some issues in the news, it's very interesting to see once again we're looking at a mass murder, this time in Henderson, Kentucky. Five persons in a plastics factory, murdered by a man who then killed himself. It's another reminder to us that we live in a world in which sin shows itself sometimes in the most violent and concentrated ways. We're going to be talking about this as our topic for conversation tomorrow on this program, revisiting the question of why human beings do such things. Looking at how Christians respond and minister in the aftermath of such an awful crime, and also dealing with the big question of evil and suffering, because James Wood, writing in The New Yorker, very interesting place to find an article like this, says once again that the problem of evil and suffering is the big issue, the great philosophical, theological issue that must be confronted by every human being, and he's right about that. So we're going to be looking at all that together tomorrow here on the Albert Mohler Program, but it's just another reminder to us that we are looking at a violent world. And we're also looking there at a crime that was committed with a handgun. It is very interesting to look at that with the juxtaposition of the case handed down by the United States Supreme Court today, when by a 5-4 majority, once again, returning to the 5-4 pattern of recent Supreme Court decisions, the Supreme Court found that the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution does indeed guarantee individual citizens a right to own and have access to a firearm. This struck down the law that had been put in place by the government of the District of Columbia, severely restricting access to handguns, and made very clear, and this is the important thing, that this court, at least a majority, a 5-4 majority on this court, sees the right to bear arms not as limited to a militia, but granted by the Constitution to individual citizens. If you were to go into a bookstore or do a Google search or something similar to try to find a controversy on the Second Amendment, you will see that that is the big issue. Those who have been trying to press an agenda of radical confiscation of guns and of gun control have been arguing that there is no individual right to own a firearm. But now by a 5-4 majority, the Supreme Court has clearly sided with a lower federal court in asserting that that right does belong to the citizens of the United States. You know, when you start looking at this, the whole question of guns, you have people on both sides who are going to make immediate arguments about which theory would lead to a safer place. I will say right up front that the no-gun theory doesn't make any sense to me at all. In the sense that that's almost like dealing with nuclear weapons this way, saying it wouldn't it be great if we didn't have nuclear weapons. I would have to agree. Theoretically, it would be great if we did not have nuclear weapons. But in a world in which nuclear weapons exist, I want them in the right hands. And that's exactly the way I look at firearms. I wish there were no need for the use of deadly force. In Eden, there was no need for a handgun. There would have been no use for one. But we do not live in Eden. We're living on the other side of Eden. We're living on the other side of human sinfulness and the fall. We're living in a world in which some people are going to have guns. And I want to make sure it's the right people, by and large, who have guns, knowing that the wrong people will have them anyway. So you start looking at all of this, and I have to tell you, I do think it is a significant gain yesterday, earlier today, when the U.S. Supreme Court handed down that decision, because I think it is going to be a landmark. And functionally, it can put to rest one question that has been debated and has allowed the states to come to different conclusions. That's what's very interesting. Now, every single state and jurisdiction is going to have to come in line with this Supreme Court decision. The majority decision, the opinion was written by Justice Antonin Scalia. It's another display of his jurisprudence and legal theory. And it's interesting that Justice Scalia here was asked to write the majority opinion for the five justices who were together in that majority. The Wall Street Journal is out with another very interesting article today. It's by Laura Landreau, and it has to do with the fact that hospitals and medical centers are now putting together ethics consulting services so that questions about end of life and other sensitive medical ethics questions can be addressed with family members and other loved ones and friends, as well as patients being advised of the ethical dimensions and potential ethical consequences of various medical treatments. Now, I'm not surprised by this. The Wall Street Journal makes the point that this has been required by a litigious society, in other words, in order to avoid subsequent lawsuits and charges by patients or the loved ones of patients that they were inadequately briefed or consulted about such matters. It looks like that there are many hospitals and medical centers who are doing this defensively. What really caught my eye is the explanation of why these things are so important. You have, for instance, several of these hospital administrators saying that much of this ethical consultation is necessary because of the fragmentation of the family. You end up with various family members that have differing agendas concerning what kind of decision should be made. It's just another reminder to me that one of the functions of the family is to limit this kind of complexity. That's why when you have an intact family with a mother and a father married to each other and you have their own children, you're much more likely to have intact decision-making than when you have the situation described here in the Wall Street Journal, where we are told there can be mixed families, there can be, well, this is one described, a second wife fighting with children over who makes decisions when dad has a stroke. One of the consultants here, that is Jean Kerwin of Summit, New Jersey, said there are complex family issues folded into complex medical issues, and it boils down to families and patients trying to deal with a fragmented healthcare system where there are so many specialists. Physicians have no time to sit with these families for 2 hours, but we can do that and help them understand what their options are and help guide them. Now, the second thing I would draw to your attention from this news article is this. Many of those who are now being advised concerning these complex medical decisions are receiving ethical advice that may be very much at odds with what they should receive from their pastor or from their church. In other words, there are a lot of Christians who are not aware that many of the most complex medical decisions are being made in far too many cases without any distinctive Christian advice, biblical advisory, concerning the nature and consequence of these decisions. I just want to encourage those of you who are in leadership in churches to recognize that you need to be there offering consultative services to your church members, to put it that way, concerning how the Bible would have us to think about many of these issues. That may be advice that is missing in the ethical consultation services offered at the local medical center. It's also interesting to see some of the other things going on in the news when you have a decision yesterday that eliminates the death penalty for child rapists, and then today saying that citizens have the right to own and to bear firearms as an individual right. It's just a reminder to us again of the importance of the judiciary. It was not always so. There has been a migration of authority and a migration of decision-making to the judiciary in recent years. That's why we have the phrase activist court or activist judge, because you have judges and jurists and courts who are deciding to take on issues that previously were allowed to be settled by the legislature or by the executive branches. Some of these questions are unavoidable. The handgun question was unavoidable. It was a clear constitutional question having to do with the violation of the Second Amendment. That is without doubt a case that should have come before the U.S. Supreme Court. But the court yesterday, in terms of the announcement made yesterday in its decision striking down Louisiana's law that allowed the penalty of death for those that rape a young child, in that case, I would argue the court should have stayed out of it. The courts, plural, including the Supreme Court and lower court, should have stayed out of it entirely. Now what is precluded in this society by the fiat of the Supreme Court is a rational and reasonable discussion among citizens and legislators as to how the death penalty should be applied and whether it should be applied in these cases. One interesting development subsequent to that decision yesterday is that both major potential candidates, the presumptive nominees for both the Republican and the Democratic parties, yesterday condemned that decision. It would be interesting to see if Senator Barack Obama would also agree that the court should never have taken the case in the first place. The same question should be addressed to Senator John McCain as well. We'll be back to talk about Planned Parenthood's new upscale strategy on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The article in the Wall Street Journal was striking and fairly frightening, I think, in terms of what it represents. It is telling us that Planned Parenthood has a new strategy, and that strategy is to establish upscale centers, many of them in shopping malls, in more suburban areas of the United States in order to gain more of the reproductive services market, including abortion in many cases, than Planned Parenthood now has. Leslie Durgan, Senior Vice President at Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, said, quote, "It is indeed a new look, a new branding, if you will." She was speaking of Planned Parenthood's new upscale approach to marketing abortions and other services to wealthier suburban women. Stephanie Simon of the Wall Street Journal is the author of this article. It is a fascinating article. She explains, flush with cash, Planned Parenthood affiliates nationwide are aggressively expanding their reach, seeking to woo more affluent patients with a network of suburban clinics and huge new health centers that project a decidedly upscale image. She goes on and writes, the nonprofit, which traces its roots to 1916, has long focused on providing birth control, sexual health care, and abortions to teens and low-income women. While those groups still make up the majority of Planned Parenthood's patients, executives say they are rebranding their clinics to appeal to women of means, a move that opens new avenues for boosting revenue and, they hope, political clout. Now, let me just tell you, on the boosting revenue side, let me ask you to keep a few numbers here in your consciousness. Number one, the number $1 billion. That's what the group took in last year. In fact, more than that. Then I want you to keep in mind the number $112 million. That's $112 million. That's how much the group reported in its last financial report of, quote, excess of revenue over expenses, end quote. Now, in the for-profit world, you would call that profit. In the non-profit world, you call that excess of revenue over expenses. Let's put it this way. They took in over $1 billion and had over $100 million left in the bank. The group also received $70 million, that's the third figure I wish you would pay attention to, $70 million in federal funds, which means your tax dollars. Now, Planned Parenthood has an agenda. It did when it was established by Margaret Sanger back in 1916, along with other radicals of the early 20th century. It had an agenda, more children from the fit, less from the unfit. It had an agenda in terms of sexual liberation that was very, very clear. The organization receives hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue from killing unborn babies, and now it wants to expand its reach into the population. Let me read to you more from the Wall Street Journal coverage. Last spring, the nonprofit, which has 882 clinics nationwide, period. I'm going to stop there for a minute. I was shocked by that figure. As closely as I've watched Planned Parenthood and its operations, I was unaware of the fact they had almost 900 centers in the United States. Just think about that. Back to the article, it says that the nonprofit dropped its crusading mission statement, setting out the rights of all individuals, no matter their income, to, quote, reproductive self-determination, end quote. In its place, Planned Parenthood adopted a crisp pledge to, quote, leverage strength through our affiliated structure to be the nation's most trusted provider of sexual and reproductive health care, end quote. Now, that's the kind of thing that didn't make the news when it happened. But that's a massive change. You now have Planned Parenthood saying, we want to be the frontline provider of these things. Gone is their references to helping people that don't have means. Now they want to leverage strength. One of the representatives for Planned Parenthood says that the new statement implies expanded services for all. She says she's especially eager to draw more male patients, but some outsiders wonder why it no longer mentions affordability or access. Amy Hagstrom Miller, who runs abortion clinics in Texas and Maryland, said, quote, "This is not the Planned Parenthood we all grew up with. Now they have more of a business approach, much more aggressive." Now, there's several angles to this that I think are just incredibly important. You have the aspect of these new upscale offices set up in shopping malls. They are known as Express. Here's how the Wall Street Journal describes them. The group has always operated some suburban clinics, but some of its local affiliates, which have a great deal of autonomy, have made a determined effort in the past few years to be, quote, the provider of first choice for people who do have other options, end quote. Officials note that health insurance doesn't always cover contraception, and even women with access to private doctors may prefer the confidentiality of buying birth control or getting a herpes test at a Planned Parenthood clinic. Now, here's the sentence that I think is likely to get your attention. "It's high time we follow the population," said Sarah Stotz, who heads Planned Parenthood operations in three Midwest states. She recently opened three Express centers in wealthy Minnesota suburbs. Now, listen to this. Quote, "In shopping centers and malls, places where women are already doing their grocery shopping, picking up their Starbucks, living their daily lives." One Planned Parenthood executive went on to say, "I like to think of it," that is the Express Center, "as the lens crafters of family planning." You know, there's one aspect to this. Here's what you have. Let's face the business here. The business is killing unborn babies. Now, they're not going to put that on the marquee, are they? I mean, not even in their downtown centers, not even in their centers that are, you know, down a street or avenue close to a college or university campus. They're not going to put that right out front, baby killing center. Instead, it's a Planned Parenthood center for reproductive services where they leverage strength through their affiliated structure. George Orwell made very clear that the step down the moral slide began with euphemism. You couldn't get away with doing what you do if you called it what it is. So you call it something else. Well, now Planned Parenthood evidently thinks that this culture is ready for Planned Parenthood Express centers in shopping malls so that they will be the lens crafters of reproductive services. I found particularly chilling this paragraph in which this woman who heads Planned Parenthood operations in three Midwest states said that they want to be where the women are already doing their grocery shopping, picking up their Starbucks, living their daily lives. Let me mention to you another chilling aspect of this story. It tells us a great deal about Planned Parenthood, tells us a great deal about where Planned Parenthood thinks America is. It tells us a great deal about the abortion industry in America. I mentioned this woman, Amy Hagstrom Miller, that she runs abortion clinics in two states. I believe it's Missouri and Texas. She's not pleased with the new approach from Planned Parenthood. You want to know why? It's going to cut into her business. One of the things you need to remember about the abortion issue in America is how much of it is driven by money. There is money in killing unborn babies. There is big money in killing unborn babies. Planned Parenthood took in over $1 billion last year. Now, Amy Hagstrom Miller is acting like Planned Parenthood is going to become the Walmart of the reproductive services or abortion business, knocking the independent locals out of business. This is what she says. Let me read to you from the Wall Street Journal. Ms. Hagstrom Miller competes with Planned Parenthood for abortion patients and finds it deeply frustrating. She does not receive the government grants or tax-deductible donations that bolster Planned Parenthood and says she can't match the nonprofit's budget for advertising or clinic upgrades. She has carved her own niche by touting her care as more holistic and by charging, listen to this, here's the cold, hard financial reality. By charging $425 for a first trimester surgery at her Austin clinic, surgery, there, the word there is abortion, compared to $475 at the local Planned Parenthood. Both Hagstrom Miller and Planned Parenthood say they work out discounts and payment plans for the needy. You know, it's very interesting. I was listening last night to Al Sharpton say that he wished the candidates would talk more about predatory lending practices. I'm sure, by the way, in that he has a point. Well, how about predatory lending practices to come up with a payment plan for a woman to kill her unborn child? I wonder, do you think about this? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Is Planned Parenthood right? That America's ready for this? We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. About 300 million Americans, something over 100 million taxpayers. You had $70 million going to Planned Parenthood. It's very interesting. You start looking at that, you figure out we're all involved in this. We're all in the abortion business now, thanks to the federal government paying for programs through Planned Parenthood. It's just another reminder of the moral complexity of living in this age. Also, by the way, in this news article, the Wall Street Journal, it mentions that Planned Parenthood is investing money in the 2008 presidential race with hopes of electing the Democratic candidate through its own political action committee. So here again, even though they're not the same exact funds, basically you had the federal government giving money, $70 million last year, to Planned Parenthood. Now we are told that their political action arm plans to raise $10 million to influence the fall campaign. It says here, under federal tax law, the health care wing of Planned Parenthood cannot support political candidates, but can advocate on issues such as abortion rights and sex education in schools. But this political action arm with $10 million they're trying to raise can influence the election directly. I'd love to know what you think about this. Is Planned Parenthood right that America's ready for reproductive services in the local shopping mall? We are told here that Planned Parenthood has begun selling what they consider to be upscale items, including a $2 branded condom promoted as, quote, a must-have fashion accessory. This is incredible stuff. Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Mike listening on WFIA in Louisville, Kentucky. Go ahead, Mike.
Dr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. It seems to me that by putting these centers on private property or in malls, going to limit our ability to be able to protest or hand out literature.
You know, that's a very interesting dynamic about that, Mike. That may be true. I have to think about that. But, I mean, certainly it is true in terms of the fact that it will change the legal context by putting it inside some kind of shopping mall like this. I believe the protest zone then could be even further away by a law from where the services will be offered. It's interesting to this degree also. It's going to be fascinating to see how many abortion services are actually available in these express centers and in shopping malls. I'll tell you the truth. I do not think that women seeking an abortion, this is just an analysis here. I just have a hard time imagining that a woman seeking an abortion is ready to walk into a shopping mall with a bunch of happy people with shopping bags. I still think, from my experience talking with women who have had abortions and who have sought abortions, and who work with women considering abortions, that that's not what they're looking for. But you obviously have a new presence, a new upscale image that's intended to be at least a very effective marketing campaign in terms of the services that will be offered in these mall centers. Planned Parenthood says they want to be the lens crafters of reproductive services. Coming soon to a mall, no doubt near you. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I think Mike's right that this is one of those issues we're going to have to track. There's probably always more to the agenda here than first meets the eye. You know, when you're talking about Planned Parenthood, and let's just remember that they have an agenda. It was very interesting. The Wall Street Journal, and I do think that the article by Stephanie Simon is a brilliant piece of good, solid reporting. What she says here is that Planned Parenthood is looking for a new upscale image. And it'd be interesting to see how they brand this. Now, I'll tell you, a lot of things like this are going in ways that ought to catch our eye. For instance, we've talked in this program about the rise of the now sex product and lingerie supercenter in malls such as especially Victoria's Secret. I was walking through a local mall here in Louisville, Kentucky. Victoria's Secret has become a lead tenant, a huge tenant. You can't go out into the parking lot if you are parked in that area of the mall without going out through this huge area with very sexually graphic advertising. And you look at that and you say, I don't think America would have put up with that even 10 years ago. I don't think they would have gotten away with that. Now they get away with it, and evidently it pays. They were expanding from the size of the store just a matter of about a year ago. And then you look at the Planned Parenthood plan to be in these upscale centers. So, you know, it won't be long until you've got it all right there in a row. Lens Crafters, Victoria's Secret, Planned Parenthood Express. You know, there are people saying in this article, it's not your grandmother's Planned Parenthood anymore. Well, it's obviously not your grandfather or grandmother's America either. One of the things that we as Christians must take into account is the cultural context of the people we are trying to reach with the gospel. We are now trying to minister to people, to reach people with the gospel, who assume that all of this amounts to the good life and is, by and large, just to be accepted as normal. It's just a strange commentary on where we are as a country right now. Planned Parenthood thinks the future is in the shopping mall with an upscale image. To join the conversation, call at 877-893-8255. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I want you to know more about the news coverage in this Wall Street Journal article having to do with the reality of the operations of Planned Parenthood. I think a lot of Americans simply have no idea. I'm reading to you here from the article by Stephanie Simon, which is indeed in the Wall Street Journal, and in an article that astounded me, as much as I have already known about Planned Parenthood. Listen to this. It says that their strategy to draw new patients and new revenue is working. It says here that under their new plan, the group makes a profit of nearly $22 on each month of birth control pills sold to an adult who can afford to pay the full price out of pocket. That's why they're opening these centers in places like Schaumburg, Illinois, where you have wealthier women who will go in and gladly pay in order to get the pills. It says then, and I'm reading from the article, their payments can then be used to subsidize other operations, health care for the poor, sex education for teenagers, or political activism. In Massachusetts, it goes on about one case, and then it says, the new strategy is also designed to protect Planned Parenthood from any cutbacks in government funding while strengthening its ability to pursue its political agenda. Now, this is the part that was new to me. I knew it had a political agenda, but I'm going to read to you a part of the story here that surprised me. It says here that under Planned Parenthood's political action arm, they're going to try to raise $10 million to influence the fall election. But to encourage the new wave of patients to join the cause, an express center in Parker, Colorado, near Denver, sells political buttons next to the condoms and sets out invitations to activism by the magazine rack. Now listen to this. A 52,000-square-foot center opening this summer in Denver uses about 20% of its space for health care, roughly 40% is for meetings, including political work. Okay? I think if this were in any other source than the Wall Street Journal, I'd be asking for some backup on the math. But this is the Wall Street Journal. If the Wall Street Journal knows anything, it's numbers. The report here is that in this new center in Denver, twice the amount of space is going to be dedicated to political work as to reproductive services for the health clinic. Now, that's just astounding to me. How many Americans understand how politically engaged Planned Parenthood is? To the extent that they're devoting twice as much space in this Denver clinic to political activism and room to be able to do that than they are even to their business of reproductive services and abortion. In Portland, Oregon, reading from the article, a planned 40,000-square-foot headquarters will include space for candidate forums and phone banks as well as a clinic. Now, that's fascinating. So, in other words, they're building these new centers, and don't make any mistake. Right up front, the Wall Street Journal has us to see that these are about political activism. So you have the combination of killing unborn babies and then the political activism to try to promote it in a building that is a nonprofit, legally designated so that there are tax credits, that is, you have tax deductions to those who contribute, and then you have $70 million of tax money from the federal government going in under various programs. They are also trying to reach out to teenagers through what is described as, quote, a crass and sassy web campaign. There you go. If you want to reach young people, that's the way to do it. According to Planned Parenthood, be crass and sassy. You know, that's just absolutely fascinating to me. It's chilling. I think that tells us a great deal about where America is, or at least where Planned Parenthood thinks America is. But it also tells us where Planned Parenthood is. And ignorance is not bliss. I just have to wonder how many Americans understand what is really going on here, understand the circularity of the money. We've got tax dollars involved here, which means that every faithful, tax-paying American citizen is an investor in Planned Parenthood and its programmings. I wonder how many communities know that when this nonprofit says, here's how much space we're going to dedicate to the clinic, they're going to be dedicating twice as much to political activism. How many Americans know that Planned Parenthood is taking $70 million and then of tax money and then creating a separate political action arm that's going to try to raise $10 million to influence the fall elections? That's just the fall elections of 2008. You know, the upscale angle of this comes down to the fact that Planned Parenthood must be having some struggle reaching people with means because they don't want to go where Planned Parenthood is before they open these centers. I mean, that's the only way this makes any sense. They don't want to go where these previous centers are, probably not in neighborhoods they often frequent, probably not in places where they want to park their Lexus or their Camry or whatever they're driving. Planned Parenthood is just unashamed and saying, we're going after the people with the money now. They even changed their mission statement so that they could do this. They want to be upscale. You know, the metaphors they use just certainly speak to exactly what the agenda is. They want to be the lens crafters of reproductive services. They want to be where the woman's going to be doing her grocery shopping and picking up her Starbucks. So, you know, we're going to have reproductive services along with the latte now. You know, I think Planned Parenthood sees this, obviously, as the way of the future. There's no particular genius there. But I think they also understand that when they start looking at the population of the United States, they believe they were losing market share. Now, how would you feel if you were in a business, the point of which is to limit births and to abort and kill unborn babies, and you're concerned with losing market share? Okay, my point here, former President Bill Clinton famously, infamously said that his goal in abortion was to make it safe, legal, and rare. You will hear people who try to say, look, we need to achieve some middle ground in America by cutting the number of abortions. People who are pro-choice and people who are pro-life, at least we can agree there ought to be fewer abortions. Well, you're not going to get Planned Parenthood to agree there needs to be fewer abortions because it's the money trail. It's their business. It's their revenue stream. They're trying to expand the market so that they can have more income. They're not trying to reduce the market. So look through the smoke and the cloud and the lies about people believing abortion's a tragedy when they're supporting an organization that's concerned with market share. You know, you look back at World War II and such things as those who made the instruments of death, including especially those that were used in the Holocaust, you know, corporations that made things like Zyklon B, the horrible chemical used to kill people, and you say, how could they be concerned with something so horrible as that? How could they produce it? How could they make a profit of it? How could then they be concerned with expanding market share? Well, look at America in the 21st century and tell me why Planned Parenthood is any different. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Very quick, we want to get one last caller. Mark's calling from Aurora, Nebraska, listening on KMMJ. Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, I was adopted as an infant, and I would like to know why Planned Parenthood is not intelligent enough to understand that the more people that they are able to get aborted, the less people that they will ever have as clientele, and they will eventually run themselves out of business.
You know, Mark, very interesting. That's kind of the proverbial catch-22 in the situation with abortion and Planned Parenthood. You'd be interested to know, and by the way, this is also from the Wall Street Journal. One of its analysts and columnists, James Taranto, has famously written a principle now known as the Taranto effect, which is that abortion on demand leads to a more conservative society over time, because the people who are more likely to have abortions and support abortions are liberal people who will then be non-reproductive liberal people. And it goes back to the fact that you have people who are arguing that you've got, for instance, on issues related to all kinds of future social trends, it's the breeders who are going to be owning the future. That's not a statement that I would come up with. That's what was said dismissively by one population consultant coming from the left who said, look, he said, our problem is not only that people are breeding, but the wrong people are breeding. The people who are breeding are the people who believe the breeding is good. The people who believe that breeding is good are by definition more conservative than the people who, by and large, are against breeding. You know, you start looking at that, you say, hey, you know, we are living in a strange world. But those who are looking at such things understand that we really do have a very sick society where delusion is possible all around. And one of the things we have to do is keep ourselves on our toes, keep ourselves accountable, keep ourselves really alert to making sure that we're seeing things clearly. I think this Wall Street Journal article helps us to see this issue very clearly. Mark, I appreciate your call from Aurora, Nebraska. I have to tell you, I am thankful that you were adopted rather than aborted, as I'm sure you are. And that's just a reminder to us that when we're talking about this, it's not only facts and figures and marketing strategies and even moral trends. It is real, live human beings, decisions of life or death. And so when we think about Planned Parenthood, its upscale marketing plan, its ambition to be the lens crafters of reproductive services, let's remember we're talking about very real lives here, the lives of women who are considering having abortions, the lives of those unborn, preborn human beings who deserve to be born. The lives of all of us whose human dignity is undermined when abortion and other grave insults to human dignity undermine and compromise the sanctity of human life. It's been a good conversation. I would refer you to my website at albertmuller.com. You'll find the article still posted today, Coming to a Mall Near You, Planned Parenthood's New Strategy. Also a link there to the Wall Street Journal. We'll come back tomorrow to talk about why people do awful and evil things. I'll join you tomorrow for the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.